Hey, I'm Michael Dorinda.
And I am a sick and nasally Jake Bennett.
And welcome to episode 42 of the North Meets South web podcast.
Episode 42.
Ever closer to that golden episode.
Golden episode 50. We get a golden play button from the podcast, governing body when you hit episode 50.
That's it.
I don't know. It's like there's a lot of, I feel like I'm proud of the fact that we've been doing this for almost 50 episodes. And really, it's slowed down a lot because, we kind of cut it in half when we took on Laravel News Podcast. So it takes some wherewithal. It takes doing this a lot of times when you really don't feel like doing it, which is tonight. That's one of those times. I feel like absolute crap, but we're going to do it anyway.
But we are committed.
We are committed to the cause.
We'll push through.
We'll push through.
We will keep it short. Our last few episodes, especially because we've had random guests on, have pushed out. So we'll try and keep this one short.
Yeah.
I know that an hour plus is a lot to ask of our listeners to, obviously to listen through, and even at double speed, it can wear on a bit.
So yeah, absolutely.
Those of you that have stuck through us the last couple, we appreciate it. We'll try and keep this one pretty short.
I agree. Yeah, let's. I'm going to jump right into it here. So, I tried Stimulus this week. Have you tried
the JavaScript framework?
The JavaScript framework for the HTML you already have. And I bet you can probably guess why I did it. I'll give you a hint. It's because of another podcast.
Yeah, it's because of our friends over at the Dads and Dev podcast, right?
Oh, close, actually.
Or is it the Full Stack?
That's it. Full Stack Radio. There you go. Yeah, DHH was on Full Stack Radio recently and was talking about Stimulus, and Adam was interviewing about that. And I was like, you know what? I've seen it out there. I should just give it a try. So I tried it out. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's interesting. It's very, very, it does some cool stuff for you, and it's like super non-intrusive. I feel like it's really close to the metal. I feel like there's not a ton of magic or crazy stuff that it does. It really just allows you to easily bind, it makes things that I used to do with jQuery, it makes them easier to do with this. Essentially.
Yeah. So would you say that Stimulus is kind of a middle ground between using jQuery and going into something like Vue or React?
I think so. I'll be honest. I only probably got maybe halfway or a little bit more than halfway through the tutorial. And the really nice thing that it offers you is it offers you like controllers, you know what I mean? And it uses like actual ES6 syntax. So you have all the wonderful magic that you get when you start using ES6 and Babel, and or as they call it, Babel. I don't know what's the right way.
Babel,
whatever it's the right way.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I don't know either.
Babel, Babel, whatever makes you happy.
Yeah, but you get all that stuff out of the box, right? And it transpiles down to previous versions so that everybody can use it. So you don't lose any of that, which is great. You get, short function syntax, all that stuff. Then you can still use that in that context, but then it just kind of like globs onto your page, and it does a little bit of magic, but not so much that you get lost in it. It's very, very simple. I was halfway through the tutorial in like 20 minutes. So they make it really easy to understand. I think like he pointed out in the Full Stack Radio podcast though, that using a combination of something like TurboLinks or what we might call like PJAX and using this together, using that combination really does give you something that is comparable to what you might be able to do in Vue or in React or something like that. Now, that is a very broad statement. That's probably not a fair statement. I would say that how do I want to say this? So like I was trying to think of like, okay, what's something that I'm currently doing in Vue that I could probably implement with Stimulus? So like I could render out to the page a full form, an actual form. And a lot of times what I'm doing is I'm just hiding or showing fields based on kind of like what my data model looks like in my Vue. And so you could totally do that with Stimulus. That'd be not a problem at all. Because you have like, you can say yep. like data.target, and that gives you the ability to, Stimulus will then kind of watch that for you. And then you can kind of check the values of that. And then you can do sort of like data action. And then you can listen for particular actions and call things based on those particular actions. So one thing that I need to clarify on here, let me see here. I wonder if Stimulus does sort of like a two-way binding. I don't know that it does. Managing state. That's kind of where I stopped, was managing state. So that's a bad place to have stopped. That's really what I'm looking at is, so you can read initial state from the DOM, persisting state in the DOM, wrap up and next steps. So the thing that I would really miss, I think, is probably the two-way binding. Yeah, so still actually has some of the things that I don't particularly like about using the sort of jQuery model sort of stuff, which is that you constantly have to be checking the state itself. The thing I like about Vue is that you just have a data model and you can access it and everything's reactive, right? The thing I don't like about it is having to maintain templates in two different locations, one on the server side, one in the Vue side sort of things. So that's what Stimulus really tries to avoid, is having to write templates in two different locations and kind of trying to have to keep those in sync. So I totally get that. Totally on board with that. I love writing stuff in Blade. Love it. It's great. I would much rather live in Blade land and write all my templates there. But some of the things that Vue offers me, the mostly fact that it's got reactive two-way binding, and then the fact that my DOM is actually a representation of a data model and not like, hey, make your controller keep checking the state of the DOM in order to know what things are, you know, where things are. That I don't miss that at all. I hated that about just doing everything in jQuery. That was so annoying. That was the worst thing in the world. And why I subsequently said Vue is like the stuff. So anyway, I need to play around with it a little bit more. But it was an interesting experiment, kind of just to check it out and see what's, you know, what it's doing and where can I implement it. I want to try and find a spot where I can use it in our stuff and see if it makes sense for some of the things that we're doing where we're previously using Vue. And I may actually be kind of moving back to some of the ideas that I used previously before I knew about Vue, which such as like anytime I have like a search thing, if it doesn't really, and I'm still thinking about this, so I'm just talking a lot here, but I previously used PJAX quite a bit in order to render out like searches. So I have like, you know, my DOM that would get created and then I would type in the search bar and then that would just resubmit a form basically to the same page with the filter on there with the search. And then I would return the updated DOM and I would just load that in via PJAX. And that worked really well. It only had one spot to maintain that template. So I liked that. But the thing I like about Vue with that is that I can move that around. I can put that anywhere I want. I don't have to ever re-implement that thing. So because it's just a component. Yeah. So I don't know. It's trade-offs. It's all trade-offs.
Absolutely. And it depends on where you want to use it. I mean, it's a very heavy-handed thing to pull in Vue if all you want is the reactivity side of things. So being able to use something like Stimulus to get that kind of functionality without having to pull in the full weight. And I say full weight. I mean, Vue is quite small lean by comparison with other things. But it also gives you, I guess, the kitchen sink in terms of like all of the functionality that you might never use, especially if you're dealing with just a simple app. And this is where, you know, app by app, you've got to look at, do I need to bring in Vue because I always use Vue, or can I use something like Stimulus, or can I get away with just using, you know, TurboLinks, which, I mean, on my own blog, it's quite light. I don't do anything crazy on there. So it's just TurboLinks just to make it seem like it's faster than it is.
Is that like a Laravel TurboLinks port kind of thing?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
So I don't remember now. It's been a little while since I looked at it last. No. TurboLinks is just JavaScript.
Right. But the way that the server kind of intercepts the headers and figures out what stuff to return and whatnot.
That's right. Yeah.
It's probably just some sort of middleware plugin or something for Laravel.
It just hijacks the request and then makes an AJAX request to swap out the DOM rather than doing a full page refresh.
Yeah. So anyway, it's always I always love listening to DHH because I feel like they come up with these really innovative ideas because he literally just doesn't give a flying anything about what anybody thinks.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, best practices, don't care. Like, what is the problem? What would be the ideal solution for me, regardless of what anybody else would think? What makes the most sense and what makes the code look the best and make me feel happy at the end of the day? Right. And like, I don't, there's, it's a special, unique sort of person who can do that, who can literally divorce, who can know all of the best practices and know the patterns and know that everything and say, okay, great. That's just information though. Like, that doesn't guide my decision. Like, it's just information. And then be able to step back and look at the problem critically and say, what's the best solution for my team? What am I going to feel best about at the end of the day? And then they make that decision and great, there we go. Like, I think that's a good thing for me that, you know, I always like, I learned that lesson again and again when I'm watching or listening to him do that. And I'm like, okay, you know what? Like, I need to be careful. I don't fall into this trap of like, well, this is what everybody's doing right now. So that's kind of how we're going to structure our code. And regardless of if it makes sense or not, you know, it's like I fall trap sometimes or fall prey to the trap of, you know, just kind of not thinking critically and just doing what everybody's doing. And so a lot of times you come back 6 months later and you're like, what the heck was I doing? Why did I do that? That made that so much more complicated and so much worse than what it would have been if I just would have taken this much simpler implementation of it.
Yeah. This is another, I guess, battle that I see Taylor coming up against a lot is interfaces in the framework. He tweeted the other day that he wanted to revisit being able to do like value object casting inside of Eloquence. So we've got the casting where you can use the primitive types, you can do integers and booleans and dates and things like that. And he was looking at revisiting a PR from a while ago where he was considering bringing in object casting so that you could pass in like a value object for an address or for a phone number or something like that and have Eloquent take a raw string out of the database and convert it into a value object. So that then gives you some functionality on top of that. So you've got the ability to get a formatted address or whatever.
I thought that was really cool, by the way. And I had never seen that. I never saw that idea pop up. Like, so that was the first time I'd seen it when he tweeted that out. So I thought that was really cool looking. Anyway, go ahead.
But a lot of that pull request devolved into sort of Taylor against everyone that was commenting on it, just fighting about, you know, having to have interfaces and things like that. And I think there's like two ways of thinking about that. It's like the quote unquote right way, and it must have an interface because you want it to have these two different methods. And there's the adding an interface doesn't really add any value to this approach. So why would we create an interface just for the sake of having the interface?
Yeah.
So there are, you know, those people, Adam does it, Taylor does it, obviously DHH does it, you know, that will understand the approaches and things like that, but still choose to, I guess, go against the grain when it makes sense. And a lot of people, they sort of want to basically die on that hill saying, you know, we have to have an interface because reasons.
Yeah.
And Taylor's very staunch. Is that the right word?
Staunch.
Taylor always goes to staunch. Yeah, he's always asking, you know, show me with code how this makes it definitely, you know, categorically better having an interface, as opposed to, you know, these two methods just have to exist on this object, and if they don't, then you get an error. And it's not like this error makes it through to production anyway. You document it, say these two methods have to exist, and you know, if the framework tries to call that function and it's not there, you get an error, you add the function, and then, you know.
Right.
So there's pros and cons to both approaches. And Taylor's main argument in that particular instance was that having an interface just moves where that error is. Instead of the framework, instead of PHP or even your IDE, if you're using an IDE, saying, you know, you haven't implemented this method, you just get the try to call a method that doesn't exist. And so,
and somebody was saying, they were like, well, the reason why you should have interfaces for all this is because then you can just like create your own, and like your IDE will like stub out those methods for you. And it's like, well, if you're writing the code like that because of your IDE, like, that's incorrect.
Yeah.
Like, no, that is not how this works. Yeah. So that's the wrong reason to write the code that way.
Exactly. Yeah. Anytime I see someone arguing that it makes my IDE behave better, you know, I need to add doc blocks with at param notate, you know, annotation in there because it makes my IDE behave in a way that they expect it to. You're right. It is the wrong way that's not a good reason to do that.
Correct. That's a preference. And if you prefer have to that, remember, that's totally fine. Yeah. Like, that's totally fine to prefer that. You are absolutely allowed to prefer that. But you should not be able to force that upon somebody else as some way of better practice because you prefer your IDE to do that for you. Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Correct. And a lot of people, in particular, in our community, not everyone uses an IDE. Correct. A lot of people are just using Sublime Text, or they're using Atom, or they're using Code. Or Vim. And whilst these tools have, or Vim, whilst all of these tools have a reasonable level of integration, I wouldn't say write code to make the IDE better, because, you know, it's not necessarily better for better or worse, you know.
Yep, I do. Yeah, have you been able to listen to the latest Full Stack episode?
The one with
DHH.
The one with DHH. Yeah. I have, and I'm probably worth having another.
He
listen.
Speaks a little bit to this whole thing. I do though, like. Yeah. This idea of, you know, show me the code, and it's really kind of why they started these new YouTube series that are going on.
Yeah.
Him kind of like with the writing good software sort of thing, and Jason with I think more like user experience and the design and things like that, because it's like, you know, he talks about like all these patterns definitely have their place. And I mean here's the deal, people, you're gonna hear me say this, I'm gonna slaughter it, and I am not qualified to make these statements, however DHH is, so I'm gonna suggest you go listen to this full stack episode. So, but basically what he says is, you know, all these patterns, like, they weren't created in a vacuum. Like, they definitely have a place, but they're all explained, and as they must be, correct, right? Because they're going to be explained to you in a book. They're explained in like this very like trivial manner. Like, here's this little piece of code that this always works with. And then what he said is, you know, these patterns get put into a real world situation where you have 40 different considerations for that particular piece of code that have to be considered at the same time. And those patterns start to break down. He's like, you may in fact have two patterns that apply to the same piece of code that are competing patterns. Like, they accomplish different things, or they, you know, they can't both exist at the same time. So how do you find a resolution to those things?
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm envious. Someday I will be there. Someday I will be there where I will be able to know that information and apply it correctly and be able to understand those trade-offs. But it's unfortunate how militant some people become when they have this tiny piece of the puzzle and they think they've got it all figured out, and whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm working in a code base at the moment that I inherited from a former colleague as a parting gift, I guess, after leaving my last job. And Look, there are no patterns. There's a lot of inconsistency in the code base. There's duplication of, like, there's different, you can see that the code was written at different stages of learning Laravel. And so there's different approaches intermingled in there. But at the end of the day, the code does what it needs to do.
Exactly.
And so you can have all the patterns and structure and whatever in the world, but as long as the code does what the client needs it to do, then the client who is paying for you to do the work doesn't care.
Yeah.
And the client is, you know, your internal customers, it's your business. Now, obviously, building product for, you know, building a product for your business is different than agency style work where you're building lots of different products for lots of different customers. But at the end of the day, you know, it's the customers that only ever see the end result. So
yeah, with sort of the work that we have to do, it is very much like worth your time and worth your while to try and make that code that we're writing as easy to understand as possible, because we will be the people who come back in 6 months and have to revisit this and change it. Client work is a little bit different. You may, depending on the type of relationship that you start with this client, you may or may not be that person who's coming back, right? And you certainly don't want to be irresponsible and write garbage code.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you can kind of get away with a little bit, you know, it's more like, okay, we need to get this project done and on budget and on time. And I guess I would understand making a few more tiny shortcuts. That sounds horrible to say. I guess more than that, I'm saying, and particularly when you are building like internal tools that you are going to have to be maintaining over a long period of time, it's very much worthwhile to, you know, make sure you're doing really good code reviews and get a second set of eyes on it, because that's exactly what it's going to feel like when you come back to it again in 6 months. So like, if I have to put my second set of eyes on it and be like, I don't understand what this code is doing here. Guarantee that's going to happen next time you need to modify that code. So make sure it's really explicit and really clear and really clean. And that's what you're going for. You know, it's not so much, did this follow the best practice or did this pattern really get fleshed out here? It's more like, how well can you understand the code when you're looking at it with a fresh set of eyes? And that's really, really important.
Agreed.
Okay. So somehow we got to that from stimulus, but anyway, yeah. So stimulus, I gotta finish out the tutorial there, but I'm excited to try it out. It's the first kind of new JavaScript thing I've tried in a long time. I've been doing Vue for a while now, and I'm pretty comfortable with it. I've been really happy with it, but there are certainly some situations where I feel like it's a little bit of overkill, you know? And so, anyway, it was just refreshing to try something new, a little bit lighter weight. It was fun.
Yeah. It's always nice to be able to try something new, but this is something actually that came up in the most recent Syntax FM podcast with Wes Boss and Scott Tolinsky, where they were talking about sort of keeping up with trends. And, you know, when you get into your little Twitter echo chamber and you're following all of these people, and all they're doing seemingly is trying new things and new technologies and things like that, it's hard to, sometimes you have to put it all into perspective for yourself. Like, if you don't need those things, there's no point in necessarily burning the candle at both ends just to try and keep up. I'll link it up in the show notes so you can have a listen for yourself if you haven't already. Ultimately, I think it's really important just to understand your limitations in terms of time and other things going on in your life, and whether or not, you know, you need to look at every single piece of technology that comes out.
Similar to how like Basecamp handles feature requests and those sorts of ideas. Like they say, what do they say, that you don't need to maintain like a feature list or a to-do list. Now, obviously, I don't think they mean that literally. Mm-hmm. I obviously do think that they probably have a backlog of product ideas. In fact, I know they do, because they said once they have a large enough set of new ideas that can't be applied to like their current code base, then they make a new version of Basecamp, right? So
yeah,
I know they have them, but the idea was they make the feature stand on the porch, the front porch, in the rain for 3 days kind of thing. With this idea that not every feature that gets requested gets in the door. And the idea that you don't need to keep a list of things, of features to do, because your users will be your reminder, right? The ones you hear over and over and over and over and over and over again, right? And sort of like, as your life gets more busy, I feel like when I was younger, I had more time. Like, and depending just on kind of age really doesn't have so much to do with it. It's more like the context, like what situation you are in life, or what's, you know, what's your current position in life.
Yeah.
And just kind of as it is, you know, as your career advances, your career is going to end up taking more of your time. If you're a married individual, you know, depending on the type of relationship you have with your spouse, a lot of times that will end up taking additional time, you know, just not like begrudgingly or anything. It just does, right? It's, marriage takes time.
It just does.
As you have children, that's obviously going to take time as well. So you do have to be more decisive about what sort of technology you want to spend your time on. And you can utilize the stack of developers, like the people who do have more time, and those people who are kind of like, not more junior necessarily, but again, kind of just a different context than you in your life. You follow those people and they'll kind of be your filter a little bit. So the stuff that ends up being the things that you need to learn about, the things that you keep hearing about and keep hearing about and keep hearing over a long period of time, right? So you don't necessarily need to invest that time on the upfront, but if there's something that you hear about over a long period of time, after, you know, it's kind of gone through its initial phases of like, okay, it's gone through version 1, 2, and 3 super rapidly, you know? You know, if you kind of wait it out and become a late adopter rather than an early adopter, a lot of times the tools that need to be in place to make it way easier have been built already by those kind of those early adopters who have recognized the early problems of the frameworks. And so now you kind of jumping into it late in the game, there's going to be more documentation. There's going to be more education around it. There's going to be more blog posts and video tutorials for people who have kind of figured out the problems for you. And as a result, your learning is going to be much more rapid than if you were one of the people who are on the front end. Now, kind of the disadvantage is that those people who are in the very front end up gaining a following because they are the front runners and the front leaders. But again, depending on the context of your life, where you are currently, you may or may not have the time to keep up with that anyway. Like if you were to gain that sort of following, there's sort of a understanding that you're going to continue to output quality content, and you may or may not have the time to do that. So it's been a good lesson for me to learn, you know, as I have more kids and as I have less time to kind of spend on this stuff, you know, on occasion I'll have time like this to just spend on a fun thing like stimulus, whatever. But Vue was definitely one of those things. I waited it out for a while before I tried it out. And when I did, I tried it out on an open source framework sort of first. So I could kind of see a put together example. I think it was on Confomo. I looked at that and was like, okay, that's interesting. That's how they're doing that. And then I kind of went from there and kind of and put it into my own projects. So
yeah, very good.
I was going to say the one other thing that's really one other thing that's fun about Vue is that you can just drop it onto the page. You don't have to like install, you know, that was the thing that was really nice about Vue. You can just literally drop the Vue script on your page and start right there. You don't have to have a build system in place.
Like I haven't used React, but like with React, there's a lot of getting up and running with it, is my understanding, that you've got to compile it all and use some build chain to get some usable JavaScript.
Yeah, thankfully that's becoming less and less difficult. They've got there's so many really cool tools out there to allow you to get like up and started with these like Hello World examples super fast. So what is it? On the stimulus one, they give you a on Glitch. You know what Glitch is?
I do not.
So Glitch is like a code editing platform sort of thing. I honestly don't, I can't even tell you that I know what it is really that well, but it's you can collaborate on code together. It's you know, think of it like CodePen. So they have a stimulus starter page. Let me think the best. So like JavaScript bin, that idea where you have like, you know, you have the JavaScript, the CSS, the HTML, whatever, all of that. You kind of have a separate window for each of those. Well, with Glitch, you kind of have like a left-hand side and you can have like folders and different types of files. You can have HTML files. You can have CSS files. You can have JS files. You can have a Babel RC file. You can have a package.json file and it'll handle all of it and set you up a little environment to develop in. And then you can kind of hack on that together with other people. So it's nice because the starter kind of tutorial with Stimulus, they say, just click here. And you click there and it gives you a little starter package. You don't have to install anything. You can just run it right there. And then if you click a second button for show live, you can have a separate window open and it'll do basically what it would do if it was like a browser sync. As you change your code, it'll auto refresh that other page.
Nice.
So it's really cool. Makes it really easy to start with some of those things. Yeah. Which I'm assuming they would have something like that for React as well. I know they do. Andrew's told me about it, but I can't remember what it is.
Sure. Just on that reloading stuff, have you used any? I know that browser sync was something that was quite prominent in sort of Laravel Elixir. Have you used that in Mix now? There's this hot thing as well. Does that?
I've used both.
Because the hot reloading, is the hot reloading just to like reload the bits that you're changing on the page?
Yes. So hot reloading is. So if you have like a view component or you have multiple view components that are kind of composed together on a page or whatever, you know, as you change it, what ends up happening, which can be annoying sometimes, is you modify it. Then if you're running npm run watch or something like that, it will recompile the code, but then you have to refresh it, right? So npm run hot just will automatically re-inject those pieces of the JavaScript. So it kind of like exactly like what browser sync did when it was just HTML. npm run hot does hot swap reloads, I guess, with just the different pieces. And then the really cool thing too is that it maintains the state in between those reloads.
Yeah.
So like if your application is currently in a state where like you're halfway through and you recognize something and I need to change that, you can go modify it. It will run the hot reload and it'll inject it in there while maintaining the state of your application, which is really cool.
That is very handy because I always find myself, as you say, refreshing the page because I've made a change to some JavaScript and then having to remember how to get back to where I was before I changed it. So I might have to look at that at some stage.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. And I mean, honestly, it's annoying sometimes even when you're working with something like browser sync, like when it was just like with HTML, because sometimes I'll do like modification of the CSS inside my dev tools or whatever, you know, and then I'll have browser sync turned on, I'll change some HTML on the page and then it refreshes and loses all my CSS changes. Like, dang it.
And you lose those changes, That's how I develop though. I change things up, like I'll write the CSS and then I'll open up Inspector and I'll change things until they look right. And then I'll go and change them in my CSS.
The thing is like Chrome DevTools actually has tools to be able to write those back to your source files. It's called Workspaces.
And you
can set it up pretty easy, but I just haven't done it ever. which is ridiculous. I don't know why. But yeah, you can just basically map those resources that are pulling in. You can say, hey, here's the workspace where those live. And then when you modify them on your Chrome DevTools, it'll save them back to your local directory. So it'll persist them. Huh. Yeah, and it'll work through SAS files and everything too. If you're using source files for like your compiled CSS and JavaScript, you can modify them right in the browser, and it'll modify them locally too.
That is kind of cool. Seeing as we're talking about modifying and changing CSS, and because we haven't given them the love that they deserve in our last couple of episodes, Spazi has a really good Laravel Mix Purge CSS package.
Really?
And for those of you that don't know, Purge CSS is a tool that is based on...
Oh, Post CSS?
Yeah, it's a Post CSS plugin, I believe, but it's a successor to Purify. It is a successor. Yeah, it was originally thought of as version 2 of Purify CSS. So for those of you who don't know what this is, essentially what you can do, and with this package that Spazi has created, is it's just a Laravel Mix plugin that you can include. So you require it at the top of your webpack.mix.js file, and then you just add .purge.css. And what this will do in production builds, not in your dev builds, is it will look at your CSS resources, it'll look at your blade resources, and when you compile down your production assets, what it will do is it will go through all of those blade files and CSS and JavaScript files, it will look for all of the CSS that you are using, and then it will strip out any other CSS that you are not using. So if you, for example, are using Bootstrap, or if you're using Foundation, or if you're using Bulma, or if you're even using something like Tailwind, it will figure out which bits of those frameworks you're not using, and it will just strip them out of your compiled CSS. And this is a really, really good way to get your, you know, uncompressed, you know, 200 kilobytes of JavaScript down to a compressed 3 or 4 kilobytes of JavaScript of only the CSS that you need.
Yeah.
So it is a huge reduction of classes that you're not using, and it is literally require the package, like install it with npm, require it in your webpack.mix.js, and then just run .purge.css as part of your mix fluent chain. And whenever you run npm run production, it'll run and handle all that for you. I had been using it when I was playing around with Tailwind previously. I had another project that I was working on this weekend, which was using Bootstrap, and I thought just for shits and giggles, I would throw it in there and see if it worked. And it reduced my uncompressed JavaScript from 800 kilobytes, uncompressed CSS from 800 or so kilobytes down to 140.
That's awesome.
So obviously once, I know, that's crazy. And once it goes into production and then it gets gzip from, Nginx, that'll come down even further. So really cool, really simple tool to use, does a lot for very little effort. And ultimately it will give you much better performance of those assets. And then, you know, they'll load faster. It's less memory being used to store and cache that on the client side. And yeah, big wins from little effort.
Yeah.
So thanks, Spazi. We'll look that up in the show notes, obviously. Sebastian Dedain, I believe, was responsible largely for writing that package. But yeah, we'll link that up. Maybe one day it'll find its way into Mix. I think Jeffrey Way was talking about it a little while ago as well.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. This is kind of exactly like what I'm talking about. When I'm talking about using that filtering of like, when do I need to get involved and jump into this? So like, I heard this a while ago, right? About Purge CSS. And I'm still kind of on the outside of like the Tailwind thing. I love the idea of Tailwind. There's so much cool stuff like with Tailwind, and I want to get involved with it. I'm just biding my time a little bit right now. Like, I know that Adam's working on a component thing and kind of like themes and that sort of stuff. And it's not like I've really had the time yet to jump into it anyway, but I'm just waiting. I'm just waiting for a little bit longer.
Yeah.
And it does hurt because you're like, oh man, all these people are talking about it. There's so much cool stuff. And you really, really want to, but it's like, man, you just gotta know when the right time is. And there is no really,
yeah,
it's the right time is different for everybody, but
yeah. And again, for you and the kind of stuff that you're doing, it's easier to just have those hand-rolled components, to have those predefined components in a Bootstrap and just use them, as opposed to figuring out, you know, what all your buttons are going to look like and how to re-implement form components and things like that. Because end of the day, you just want to have a consistent interface. And all of your stuff is already Bootstrap, so I don't know why you would necessarily swap everything over to Tailwind. Because at that, if you're going to swap it all over, you may as well swap it to Bootstrap 4 and then keep all of that consistent look and feel that your stakeholders and your customers are already familiar with.
Yeah. Yeah. So like by not jumping in early on this post CSS train and this purge CSS train stuff, it's like, you know what? Somebody ended up developing exactly what I would have needed to make anyway. And now I can just use it for free, pretty much. I mean, other than a postcard to Spotsy. Yeah. Thank you, Spotsy.
That's it.
I was going to say, this is a little bit shameful, but in the spirit of rapid application development, on some of these on some of my projects that I've been working on recently, like two projects in particular that I'm thinking about, there have been projects where I'm like, okay, I just need to get this started and get something on the page, like prototype. I use welcome.blade.php. I literally just inline my script, inline my styles. I will usually do script stuff like in Mix because it's so freaking easy and because the components are already set up in my resources. And so I'll just like do a copy of the example component and just, you know, whatever. So that's easier for, it's still easier to do that for the JavaScript stuff. But like with CSS and whatever, I just chuck it all on the same page and just start and just go. And until it gets to the point where I'm like, okay, this is painful now, and now I'm going to swap it out. And that's totally fine. But for the two projects that I've been working on, literally I haven't hit that point yet. I'm still just working in welcome.blade.php. I take it back. For one of them. For one of them, I swapped. I started moving stuff out because it got to the point where it was a little bit, I needed a couple different pages. And so I had to kind of extract something. But even at that, I think I just like really quickly like put a yield content tag in the like welcome.blade kind of thing. And then just said, okay, extend. Which is stupid, but it's like, honestly, it doesn't, I mean, it matters at some point. At some scale, it matters.
At some
point,
but
they're still just toys. So it doesn't matter, right? It's not worth spending the time to do it sometimes.
Well, I mean, you say that, but laracon.com.au is all welcome.blade.php.
Yeah.
And as I was building that, I started to put in some Blade components, like for the speakers and for... No, I think it was just the speakers. I started putting in some Blade components and I thought, you know what? I don't know why I'm extracting this because literally the only place I'm using this is in this one place.
Yeah.
So I just looped through all of the speakers and display
That's
the same
true.
HTML. So yeah, it's a good point you raise. Like start simple and extract when it hurts.
Yeah. And also like, get, you know, do the thing that gets you excited and gets you momentum. Like don't spend your first like part of your project like getting all the boilerplate crap set up. Like that's the easiest way to demotivate yourself and make sure you don't get that project started. And if you just have an idea.
Or writing interfaces.
Yeah, writing interfaces, exactly. And I would say like if you have an idea, I know that like this is a topic of conversation where it's like first get a landing page, which I think is a genius idea because, you know, I've had to have this discussion a couple times with people recently where they're like, oh yeah, let's do this. This sounds great. I was like, okay, how many people are going to use that? They're like, I'm sure it'll work. It's worked over here. I'm like, okay, how are you going to distribute that? How are you going to get, you know, like, do you think you can get 1,000 people to sign up for that page? They're like, oh man, I don't know. Where would we find those people? I was like, good question. You should probably figure that out before you spend all the time to develop that thing. Like you, it is because literally, nobody cares how cool your thing is if nobody knows it exists. You got to figure out the distribution before you ever start your idea, because otherwise you're sunk from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And this is one particular place that I've done some work for that does that. They do that. There's like, hey, this is a great idea. Let's do this. And I'm not going to complain about it because like, sure, I'll do that. But it's like, you have to help them think sometimes like, okay, you got to figure out distribution. What are you doing? You know, who are you selling this to? There was something else. What was I going to say? Dude, I seriously like...
You're going to talk about my awesome HomePod.
Yes, that too. I have sick brain though. Like my sick brain doesn't always...
Is that Is that like baby brain?
It's like baby brain. Yeah.
My wife, this is one of the very few things that I remember, but my wife once told me, and this was before she was pregnant, that baby brain is not a thing, that people just make that up. So of course, the one thing that I have remembered now that she is pregnant is that baby brain is not a thing.
Oh, it all comes back to bite you. Make fun of those pregnant people. I tell you That's what. It. No mercy. No mercy. Tell me about this HomePod. So I saw you got that the other day. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah, I caught up with a friend for coffee the other day, and I had to drop him back home, and his house was on like the other side of the Apple store. So I said, you know what, let's go and have a look. Because I had a look at the HomePod.
Just got to have a look.
And I'm like, that's how they get you. I want to go and have a look at it again.
That's how they get
you. Yeah. I wanted to get something for the nursery, just like as a speaker to have in there. So this is probably not it. If don't do what I did. Don't buy a HomePod for your nursery.
I'm glad you recognize that.
It's too expensive. I knew that. But I'm like, I could buy two of the Sonos speakers and have one in the nursery and then have one somewhere else in the house. But I went in there and I had to listen to it. And it's expensive, yes. But for the size, and if you compare it to the other devices on the market, so if you look at the Echo or the Google Home or the Sonos speakers or even the new Sony ones that have just come out, they are inferior to the HomePod. Like the sound on this thing is ridiculously good.
I've seen the reviews all say the same.
Yeah. So, I mean, it only works, to my understanding, it only works with Apple Music, which is fine because I'm all in with Apple Music. It works quite well with our HomeKit connected like bulbs that we already had. So, you know, I can get it to turn the lights on and off in the family room and that, which is where we've got it set up at the moment. So obviously once it goes into the nursery, it'll be not good for that thing. But you just walk into the kitchen, you ask Siri to DJ for you and off she goes. So
that's pretty cool. Yeah.
And that's something that I didn't know. If you ask it to DJ for you, which is something that works with your phone and iPads and whatever other devices you've got, assuming you've got Apple Music, is it'll actually put together a pretty decent mix of music if you just ask Siri to DJ for you. So yeah, something to keep in mind. You'll note that I avoided saying the proper trigger for it though. So nice. If anyone else has any Apple devices, hopefully they didn't all go off at once for you.
Nice. I've got the Google Home. I've got the two Google Home Minis. One of the Home Minis is in the nursery upstairs and it works great for that. So it's plenty loud enough in that tiny little room for I have to turn it to about 30% volume. The little Google Home Mini is. It's a little bit tinny, of course, but like, who cares? We're playing nursery rhymes in there, or not nursery rhymes, but little nursery songs in there. The Google Home downstairs, even when it's 100%, it's still not really enough to fill the space. I looked at the Google Home Max at Best Buy yesterday, and I just don't know if I'd want that in my house. It's huge. It's huge.
Yeah.
If it wasn't so big, I would totally consider getting one. Well, that, and it's like $400 and the hardware isn't as good as the HomePod. But I'm already kind of in the Google Home train. So I kind of feel like I'm going to be forced to get one at some point. Because our kids love to have dance parties. It's like their favorite thing in the world. So we have like dance parties probably every other day. Like we've got a fireplace in our living room now. And so they take turns like standing out there and just dancing and lip syncing to the music that we have on. And then it's so funny. It's just good times. So I'll have to get a big speaker at some point, but it'll probably end up being a Google Home Max just because I'm already there. And you know what? So the other thing,
I'm
in that. Even though I'm like an Apple guy, I've got Apple everything. But the nice thing is, so like from the Google Home, you can tell it to play to like a Chromecast or whatever, which we have in the other room. You can set the music from your phone and then like, you don't have to continue streaming it from your phone for it to play there. You can just, it'll just play it. So like, that's nice. So I can like set up from my phone. I can say, set the nursery music to be this. And then I can set the downstairs music to be this. And then I can go watch a movie on my phone. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And you can also, you know, wire all of them together. So like two Google Homes downstairs, a regular size one and a mini, and I networked them together to be main floor. So I can say play whatever on main floor and it will just play it across them and sync them, which is cool. So I know that's coming in AirPlay 2 for the Google Home HomePod, or I'm sorry, the Apple HomePod.
Yeah.
So
luckily for me, by the time that comes out, I probably won't be able to afford to buy another one.
Yeah.
Expenses will be tied.
Yeah. Yep. They'll be set in stone at that point. Well, speaking of children, I just heard one of mine wake up, so I'm gonna have to head upstairs and my wife is really sick right now too, so I'm gonna have to man the stations and get those kids back.
This is something I'm not looking forward to. Like, I don't get sick, but I hear that these tiny little disease creatures that you you spawn, yeah, just like they get you sick all the time. Oh. And it's like mum sick and then mum recovers and then dad gets sick. And
it's been a month of constantly this.
Like, I'm hoping
this.
My immune system holds up. Yeah, I hope my immune system holds up, but I don't want that.
No.
Just bouncing, like, especially when they go to school, yep, and they pick something up from kids at school.
Exactly.
And then it just goes through in one big circle.
You got it, yeah. No, a couple of weeks ago, like I think 2 weeks ago, we took three of the four in. It's like we had to get a chest x-ray, we had to get steroids for one, we had to get antibiotics for the other. It was just a mess. And then it's like, okay, that was 2 weeks ago, and now everybody's kind of feeling better. And then my wife just got really sick, and another one of ours is getting sick again, and I just got sick this week. So it's been rough, but we're doing okay.
There's, yeah, there's
still lots to be thankful
good
for. So
yeah.
All right. I mean,
you're all still here, so that's the
important
thing.
Exactly. All right, folks. Well, we promised to keep this one short. It's still 49 minutes has been gone by. It's always good to talk to you, Mr. Dorinda. We always have much to talk about.
Same to you.
Thanks for everybody for listening. This was episode 42. Is that right? 42? All right. I got it. Show notes for this episode will be at northmeetsouth.audio/42. You can catch up with us on Twitter at Michael Dorinda, at Jacob Bennett, or at North Meets South. If you like this episode, please feel free to rate us up in iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Michael is smiling, which means I probably got something wrong. North South Audio?
At North South Audio.
At North South Audio. My bad. Yeah, I think that's it. I think that's all of it. I think I got it.
Don't forget to rate us up.
Yeah.
5 stars.
There you go.
Don't give us anything less than 5 stars.
But if you do give us 5 stars, we will read your review on the show. So
we will.
Yeah. If you give us 1 star, we'll probably read all reviews on the show if you want to give us one. But
yeah. We'll certainly talk about you if you give us 1 star.
We will.
I guarantee it.
And if you know anybody who's looking for a development job in Central Illinois, send them to me. We're hiring another developer, and I would love to get some quality candidates in the door. I know Lair Talent, blah, 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 whatever. It just seems like everything's so bent towards remote work these days. It's really hard to find local people, you know?
No one wants to put pants on and go to an office.
It's true. I can't blame them for that. It's true. But Central Illinois, Bloomington Normal, is a great place to be, to raise kids. It's awesome. You should move here. That's what you should do.
Yeah, I'll hire you. I don't know. It snows over there.
It does.
And I don't really care for snow, so.
All right.
I'll stay here looking out the window, blue skies, not a cloud.
All right. I can't blame you. All right, man. Sounds good. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
Take it easy.
Yep. Bye.
See you all. Bye.